Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
All right, we is recording and crumbs. You know what? I actually forget how to do this, you know. All right, okay. All right, 3, 2, 1.
It's always good when you start the podcast and your producer starts it by saying, I've forgotten how to do this.
wait a minute. That didn't do anything. All right, 1 minute.
What happened? What's that music?
I think I've messed up here.
Hi, I'm Alexandra Banitsa Lukanka Sofia Gwivec Tanyub. Quick marry me before Brexit. Fucking Viktorova. Hi. I'm Alexandra Banitsa Lukanka Sofia Gwivec Tanyub. Quick marry me before Brexit Viktorova, but you can call me Lexi. When I'm not strawberry picking, getting English lessons from Kirsty, working in Grey Gables, getting taken up Lakey Hill by Roy, or carrying Ian and Adam's baby, I like to listen to Dum Be Dum.
Fucking hell, that's a mouthful.
We'll do it again.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
This is Dum De Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that has centered an Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the skimpy little bar lamb that is Royfield Brown, and with me I have the hysterical sheep being chased around the barn by Toby with a pair of pliers. That is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of life in the lambing shed, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dum De Dum is collected from the voices of the Ambridge academics. We actually had visuals for this one, which we'll post on the Twitter feed and on the website, Lucy.
Oh, yes. Sorry, I forgot.
Yes. No, yeah. I know. You don't like the website, do you?
I'm not very modern.
Says a woman who's speaking through Zencaster 5,000 miles away from me, you know, co-hosting the show. Yes.
I can't see this internet thing catching on, to be honest. But anyway.
Neither. Right, but Lucy, somebody else wants to capture a whole load of greying Middle England, middle-aged Archers fans in a room singing a dum-de-dum. How can they do that?
If that's a bit rude. If you would like to sing us a dum-de-dum, leave us a plot prediction.
Loose. Don't get me wrong, right? I'm 50 this year. But those people were not in the first flush of youth on that video.
There were lots of young ones I could see.
Really?
Yes. You're being ageist. Anyway, if you would like to sing us a dum-de-dum, leave us a plot prediction, or have a stand-up fight with a pension over paying for a pancake, then call us on 0203 031 3105, or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thank you to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and for doing the Dumpty Dogs, Shambridge for her voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and to Derek for loaning the back bedroom. Derek is very, very upset about KFC running out of chicken. as that is his go-to romantic restaurant. buys Auntie Cardboard a large fries and she dips his nuggets.
That's quite good. I think you'll find the nuggets is McDonald's, but you know, I don't know, pick holes in actually your gag, because it's a very good gag. Did I tell you about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, I walked into a KFC in Oakland and there was only one person behind the counter? Have we had this conversation?
No.
Yeah, only one person behind the counter, and there was like a whole world of people. So he was like taking the money, then running back to the deep fat fryer, coming back, whatever. And I thought it was odd, but I didn't really think about it. And to be fair to him, he's working incredibly fast. And I walked out of there. Typically, for me, I had my headphones on because I was listening to a podcast. And this bloke was kind of gesturing to me, you know, and talking. So I went, oh. So I took my headphones off. And he said, it's outrageous. Everybody's refused to come to work. He's the only person that turned up to work that day because they're all complaining about their pay or lack of. He was the one person who was manning the whole of the KFC, and there was easily 15 people, and he was serving the lot. Yeah.
Well, was it a strike or were they just being bolshy?
I don't know. I kind of was too busy talking.
Because if
into
it was a strike,
kitchen,
then he's a scab. But well, if it wasn't a strike and they're just being rotten, then that's a bit mean for him, isn't it?
I don't know. And I didn't engage my brain. And I was just chewing down on my chicken drumstick or my chicken breast, whatever the heck it was. So only when I got in the car and drove off, did I actually think exactly what you said. I went, wait on a minute. And basically what the guy said to me was, he said, it's not right because they're, you know, they only get $14 an hour. Now, in and of itself, that is not bad money for America, but it's not great for the Bay Area because the Bay Area is as expensive as London.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And also, they're not going to get tips, are they, in a fast food place?
Well, this is it. But yeah. I suspect, anyway, that's my KFC story. And I haven't been back since. And I have KFC like once a year, if that. But I was on this kind of eat carbs kick, which I know isn't great to go to KFC. But I was driving past and, you know, and the Colonel called me in, so to speak. On this week's episode, we have calls from Maeve, Witherspoon, Claire and Catherine. But first, before the calls, before talk of Wakanda forever, it's Lizzie Freeman and A Week in Ambridge. Oh,
music.
That's what I'm saying. All right. This is what I'm saying. I'm doing anymore. You get into the script and then you forget to do this, Lucy.
Well, I never thought I'd be listening to the Archer's omnibus and hear the words, get hold of the testicles and pop them all the way through. He won't mind you touching them. No, it wasn't Adam and Ian making a last-ditch attempt to get pregnant naturally. It was Toby in the lambing shed with Eddie. Castrating the lambs, I mean, not just exploring that side of their sexuality. It was a frosty morning at church as the warring Grundys and Carters joined to share brotherly love and passive-aggressive taunts. Alan preached a sermon about the good Lord providing, but somehow Susan managed to hear the parable of Get on Your Bike by St. Norman Tebbit. Toby did the lambing and nothing died, we don't think. He's really got to grips with life in the lambing shed. He's got the ewes doing aqua aerobics. He's found them all doulas and he's giving them lavender oil neck massages. If I was Pip, I'd be worried the second she goes into labour, he'll be there with a coil of rope and a testicle clip, rubbing her down with straw. Brian was dithering over whether or not he should fall on his culvert and resign his chairmanship of the BL board. Piggy went to see him, and it was either raining or Brian was in the shower, which must have been a bit of a shock when a furious little nonagenarian banged on the cubicle just as he was rubbing on the radox and wondering whether his yield was getting smaller. Peggy was outraged at Brian's cowardice. Take a leaf out of my book, Brian, said Peggy. You must stick to your guns, even if you are completely wrong. It all started going adrift when Brian was trying to relax and found some of Kate's special tea. He made a big pot of it and then became completely paranoid. He was hiding behind the chair in Annabelle's office, convinced that Justin was out to get him, muttering about Jerry wants to get my job, Annabelle wants to get my job, they're all after me. Then he came home and ate 3 donuts and felt a bit better. Just in time for the BL meeting, which resulted in Justin saving Brian's arse, but it does now mean that Justin has Brian's wrinkly old balls in a vice tighter than Toby and his pliers in the lambing shed. Susan is job hunting. There's not a lot out there for someone like me, she said. I've checked and hardly anyone's looking for a rude, indiscreet, self-aggrandizing bossy boots prone to giving medical advice based on no scientific knowledge whatsoever. Susan, actually, I have the perfect job for you. GP's receptionist. There's three at my surgery and they're all like you. In one of those completely desperate surprise party that doesn't work out so the people doing it end up having it themselves storylines, beloved of sitcoms throughout history, Nick and Joe ended up having a romantic meal for two. Well, I say romantic. It was allegedly cannelloni. It involved gammon, cheddar cheese and cider. Cannelloni my arse. It was a toasty. It was about as Italian as Roy Tucker. Over at Ambridge View, Neil had got confused and thought he was a waiter. He appeared at Susan's elbow and said, "How was everything with your meal?" I thought, any minute now, he's going to say, "I'll be back in a second with the card machine." I got a bit confused on the hunt. Philip asked where Charlie had gone and Shula said he'd run towards the cops. For one berserk moment, I thought Charlie Thomas was back and there was some sort of vigilante manhunt going on and he was rushing to harassment for help, then realised it was all coconutting nonsense. After the rumble in the bull, Nick's been given the old heave-ho by Jolene. "Oh, no," said Will. "That is awful. You'll have to be at home all day making treacle puddings and looking after the children and darning my welly socks. And I'm so, so unhappy about that. Why don't you go and have a word with Helen Titchener? She could tell you how to make proper custard." In a wildly misjudged idea, Emma, who'd got Nick fired in the first place, went round to Greenwood Cottage in her What Tyler mode and said she'd put in a good word for her at the tea rooms. Understandably, Nick told her to shove it up her upcycled raffia work, but with her mother's total inability to know when to back off, Emma was hauled away by Ed, still ranting on that she wasn't going to give in and that she'd completely forgive Nick for forcing her to get the sack from the bull. "What's Gran knitting?" asked Pip. "Every time I see her, she hides her needles. Just after she's pulled them out of the eye sockets of that little knitted effigy of Toby." Now, for those of you from overseas, it is a Welsh thing that people are called after their job. Jones the milk, Evans the post, etc. Krusty's new love interest is a builder, so I think Philip the screw will do admirably. They sat in a hide together pretending to watch birds, but it was basically dogging with binoculars from what I could tell. Peggy decided to take Auntie Cardboard and Jill out for a celebratory crap. That's what my spell check says anyway, and who am I to argue with it? Ian had done a special crap menu for Shrove Tuesday, apparently. It all got a bit awkward at the end, as Auntie Cardboard wanted to pay for everyone's crap, and eventually everyone let her after a lot of shrill shouting. But it was fine. It's Ambridge, after all. We're all used to dealing with crap. The end.
Oh, well done. I enjoyed that this week. Luce.
Yes.
Right. I'm distracted. I did listen to The Archers last week. But you know what I also did? Take a wild guess.
I don't know. Oh, you went to see that film, didn't you?
That film.
That film, whatever it's called. Panthers. The Pink Panther. The Black Panther.
That's the one. The Pink Panther. I saw that. So, actually, there was this little girl in the queue who was in this pink onesie, and I thought, she's got it all wrong. But she's actually just in her pyjamas, you know. I don't know about that type of parenting, actually. You know,
I want to go out, so I don't care whether my children are exhausted or not because I want to go and see something. Yes.
So she was in the right film. But, you know, talk about an event, right? The buzz on Thursday was just awesome. Right. So I was in the foyer. No, before you even get into the foyer. So you're queuing up. People just tap you on the shoulder. So, "Are you excited? Are you excited? Are you excited as me?"
Really?
Yeah. It was.
Yeah, you can tell you're in America. Bonkers. It wouldn't bloody happen here, would it?
Well,
everyone just stand there in silence moaning about the long queue.
Well, according to my black friends that watched it in the UK, they said it was rather similar.
Are some of your best friends black?
Can you believe it? So I finally got in, and then I was like queuing up for a beer, and this guy just tapped my shoulder and said, "I am pumped!" Like that.
I am completely overexcited. I've been up. I'm up past my bedtime.
It was just so funny. I was kind of burst out laughing. He says, "Aren't you pumped too?" So, yeah. But it was just lovely seeing people all dressed up.
He said, "I am British. Yes, I am pumped. This is me, pumped. Thank you.
You know what, Lucy? I kind of basically did undercut him by saying something very similar. I says, "We don't do pumped where I'm from." But no.
We have a smattering of light applause, yes.
Exactly. Last week in Ambridge, I'm loving. I loved all of the Brian stuff with him going to the board. It reminded me a little bit of Dallas. You know, it was.
Yes, and that, as we always say, that Fry and Laurie sketch. Damn it, Marjorie! That one, the Fry and Laurie sketch, where they keep banging the whiskey around. Yes.
Loved all of that. And I loved Peggy being all kind of like, you know, belligerent and like, nope, you know, have a backbone, man.
Yeah.
You know, do not buckle. You know, you've done nothing wrong. Not sure about that.
Well, Peggy does have form, but resolute, as I said in the monologue, resolutely sticking to her guns, even when she's utterly to blame and totally wrong. She's like, I'm not back. I know I'm wrong. I don't care. It's a matter of principle now. I'm just going to be, you know, belligerent and intolerant for the bloody sake of it, because I started, so I'll finish.
Yeah. No, I must admit, I did like that, and the way that she, you know, stiffened the sinews of Jennifer, and, you know, and Jennifer then kind of goes off.
I did like her ringing him just before the meeting, and mind you say this, Brian, and don't let them say that.
This Philip character.
Yeah, I didn't like the snogging in the bird hide. That was all a bit yuck.
Would R. Kirsty, who's all an eco-warrior and greener than Swampy, be up for a bloke that goes on the hunt?
But he explained why, didn't he? Not this week, last week. He said it's about, you know, it does a lot to protect the countryside and yada, yada, yada.
And I'm not against that as an explanation, but wouldn't she be a little bit more sceptical? Wouldn't he need to explain it a little bit more? Because...
Yes, yeah, maybe. But, you know, maybe she fancies the arse off him. You can forgive a lot, I think.
Yes. Right, yeah, okay. What ifs. Okay, so shall we go and see what the great dum-de-dum listening public have got to say about all the goings-on last week in the Archers? All right, then. Let's have a little bit of this, then.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Who's first, Lucy?
Maeve!
Oh, she's back. Right, now, call quality on this is not the best.
That's because she's in a cupboard, though, to be fair.
Oh, I thought it was a little
I don't know why she's still in a cupboard, because all our children have left home. She used to go in the cupboard to hide from them. But they've all left home now, she said. But she's clearly, she just finds comfort in the cupboard. And who are we to contest that, if that's what makes her
happy? I don't know. Sounds like some domestic abuse going on in the Maeve household there. But anyway, here we go. Here's Maeve.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. Hello, everybody. It's Maeve from In the Big Press. But I'm in the Small Master, actually, not the Big Press. The kids have left home. Hey, that's another long story. Anyway, the reason I'm ringing is because I just wanted to express my... hatred of Will. What a total arse. I think his and Nick's relationship is teetering on the brink of collapse. I think that Nick is very unhappy, and her being sacked by Jolene the snake has probably going to tip her over the edge, and I think she'll get probably heading into a storyline about depression. I don't know. Anyway, I'd be depressed if I was married to Will, to say the least, and had a Damien-esque stepson like George. Anywho, that's all I want to say. Hope everybody's well, and catch you later. Bye.
Bye.
Goodness. It's a whole...
Well, that wasn't the cupboard. Where the hell was she this time?
The Master, she said. But it's like...
Oh, she's in the Mazda. I thought you meant she was in Asda.
No, the Mazda.
Oh. But why was she whispering? Maybe there was someone on the back seat asleep. What goes on in Maeve's life? This is...
Can I just say...
Yes.
That I detest, like everybody, I detest Will Grundy. Mm-hmm. And I know we've talked about the long character arc of, or the plot points of the Will and Ed, you know, Cain and Abel like scenario, and the fact that they did a switcheroo, didn't they? It was always Ed that was the, you know, the wayward one, and Will was nice and good and stable, and then they've done a switcheroo. And in the last couple of years,
well, he's still stable. He's just horrible.
Well, yeah,
he's just
horrible. But he always was the nice one. He was the nicer brother.
Well, not nice. He was the respectable brother.
I'm going way back. You know, Ed was always wayward and was getting into scrapes and stuff and was a worry. Let's put it that way. Anyway,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
My point is, in the last few years, after Ed shot the dog,
yeah,
they kind of had a bit of a quiet rapprochement, didn't they? And it was through their partners.
Yeah.
And they were kind of, you know, they weren't drinking buddies, but they were tolerating each other, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
I love this return to hatred. I love it.
You're never happier than when someone's battering seven bells out of someone else, are you?
Well, it's like, it's part of the firmament of Ambridge. The two Grundy mm-hmm. brothers are not supposed to like each other. And I like the tension at the core of it, in that their partners were trying to get on, now they've fallen out. And and also, I like the fact that Nick is so different from Emma, that she is, you know, this bundle of naivety with niceness, with a certain amount of shallowness, being led by her evil husband. I love it. I love the whole setup, Luz.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah,
love
it's it. Nice and complex. They're proper
Absolutely.
Complex characters. They're not just one-dimensional. And but it's interesting how many people have said on the Twitters this week that there are shades of Rob in what Will's doing, and that he's trying to sort of undermine her and saying, oh, because the first thing he said was, oh, I never thought I'd be, oh, I wasn't expecting to have to cook the children's tea because now you haven't got a job anymore. You know, you can do what women are, basically you can do what women are supposed to do, which is stay at home and look after children.
Yeah.
And her sense of fury at, you know, she says, I'm in this house cooking dinner or doing laundry and that's it. And he's like, and the problem with that is what? You know?
Yeah, exactly. She loses her job in the ball, and the first thing he says was, well, we don't need the money, you know. So,
Go
home and be a good wife.
Yeah.
I don't like it, but I know. What a great character. Horrible. What a great character.
But partly, I think... I think part of the problem is the way that the boys were brought up, because they saw Clary never compromised anywhere. She worked flat out doing about 18 jobs all at once to try and bail out the Grundy finances, but also would never dream of cooking something out of the freezer or oven chips or, you know. And it was always, given the chance, she would rather not work and she would rather stay at home and look after the children. And both boys just assume that's actually all women want to do because of Clary's example.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. And I know we had a call some months ago and somebody said something remarkably similar. And then I think it was you, can't remember who then followed it up by saying, but, you know, Clary did do all these other jobs. But from Will's point of view, he's deeply, deeply, deeply conservative.
Yeah.
And he just believes a woman's place is at home. And he would turn around and probably say, yes, my mom went out and did these other jobs and you know, and she worked in... she worked for the Bridge Farm.
And
Archers,
I always swore my wife wouldn't have to.
Exactly.
That sort of,
and that's the reason why I work so hard and I've got my own, and I've done so well now. And he disassociates himself from past Grundy struggles that way, doesn't he? You know, look at me now type of thing. And he looks down at Ed about the fact that he can't do that for Emma, doesn't he? That, you know, Emma has to go out and have three jobs and it's because Ed's not pulling his weight, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, he absolutely said that. You know, I love it. I didn't like all this, you know, Grundy boys starting to like each other stuff. Hated it. Back to form. Awesome.
Well, normally what happens is we have a crisis where something threatens either Eddie or Clary, and then the boys pull together to save the family. Do you remember, like, last time when Eddie was being threatened? There were poachers, weren't there? And they were worried about Eddie, and so they went to go and help, and then they sort of worked together.
Yeah.
And that's how it sort of deals itself out, this scenario. So we'll just have to see what happens next. I bet it will be Joe dying, won't it?
Stop it. Joe's not going to die.
We can't have this much reminiscing. We've been through My Susan, How They Met. We've got, you know, it's endless. Of course he's going to cark it.
Ever since Joe's been in The Archers, which is the late 70s, which I know is before you and I were listening, but there never was a Susan, was there? Susan was always before.
I think so, yes. I don't know.
I'm almost positive. Dusty or somebody who has a longer vintage than either of us, if you could just call in next week and just confirm. But I don't ever think there was really a Susan. And it was interesting, and I had to read up about this a couple of months ago, that when the Grundys were introduced, they were introduced as a family that was always there. Anyway, I just thought I'd just say that just because, really. Now, shall we have another call, Arloose?
Yes, why not?
Who do you want?
Who's next on my list? Have you not got the list?
I'll tell you what, I'll just press this button, shall I?
Good evening, Dumpty Dummers everywhere. This is Catherine Rowan Jones calling in from High Wycombe at 88 Ivy Fox on the Twitters. Firstly, I hope that nothing unpleasant has happened to any of the presenting team this week or their pets. far too many mishaps, really, been going on. Not nice for you. I'm calling in to talk about The Contaminated Land. I'm really enjoying this storyline. I think it's something that is unique to the soap opera, docudrama, that is Ambridge. And on the science program, there's an interview with Graham Harvey, the agricultural editor. And based on this town is listening to Farming Today, it all sounds pretty potentially realistic. The other thing I'd like to talk about is Will. He's a total fucking arse, isn't he? He's getting worse. I really don't like how he's treating Nick. And he's not bothering to hide it, which is maybe a good thing that somebody will pick up on it, or he doesn't give a toss. Don't like it. I like her interactions with Joe. It's sweet. I think she's seen just what a good, caring marriage can be. And maybe she'll realise just what an utter fucking cock of a husband she's got. draw the testicles through the ring and pull tight. I think I've heard instructions like that before, but it certainly wasn't on radio for. Love you all. Thank you for everything you do. You're wonderful. Bye-bye.
You know what? I think she has the most amazing voice. There's a certain air of gangster's mole menace and world weariness at the same time. And just like, if you bother me, I will fuck you up type of attitude.
She sounds like the crazed mum. That's what we're going. There was a lot. I'm applauding the swearing as well. There's a lot of swearing in that. I like a good swear. That's the second time that Will's been called an arse in two calls. Mm. Which isn't bad going, really. But I think it's interesting, though, that I don't think that, you know, as she said, maybe he doesn't care. Mm. I just don't think he has any awareness that he's doing anything wrong.
No, I think you're completely right. You're completely right.
He just doesn't have that level of insight at all. No. Just nothing. You know, he's just... the inside his head is just like an echoing void. That's it. There's just no, you know... Or like a child's railway set where it just goes round and round and round. There's nothing else. Yes, the man's an idiot.
It's just occurred to me, he's so evil. He's actually got no mates, has he?
No. No.
When they were all teenagers, wasn't he mates with Roy?
Yeah. Yes, he was.
Yeah, and it's just... When you think about it, Will is completely and utterly isolated other than... his immediate family.
But he got to the age of 20 and then immediately just decided that he was going to be 42 and a mini, you know, desperate to be a mini Brian Aldridge sort of thing. It's, you know, he just wants
to... The way he kowtows to Brian.
Oh, I know.
Tugging on his bloody forelock.
I'll change your tyre. Didn't go that far, I don't think, but I'm sure Brian suggested it, he would. I'll change your tyre, Jennifer, I'll do this. And he loves the fact he can call him Brian and Jennifer. Mm. And, you know, when silly old Nick said, they've been really good to us, I thought, no, they haven't. They're not at all. They've just treated you like an employee. They haven't abused you, but they haven't been really good to you. They've just employed you. That's it.
But I think from Nick's point of view, remember there was that the whole farrago around the shoot, and Will kind of slightly got it in the neck about it, and he was upset about it, and Nick went to Jennifer and said, actually, Will didn't screw up. So there is, though it's definitely master and servant, there is a relationship.
Yeah, there's just this... Will has this desperate need for feudalism, doesn't he? That's the only way he feels vindicated is by, you know, having the, you know, I'm sure he'd be offering up Nick for the droit de seigneur, given half a chance. But I think
Lucy, that's the line of the show. There's a desperate need for feudalism.
No, but you know what I mean. And he can't stand it that Ed, who he sees as feckless and doesn't play the game and doesn't, you know, go along with feudalism, is, you know, quite happy and trundling along. I mean, he's not great, but he's okay, you know, and that really annoys Will, because in his universe, if you get above yourself or you do not follow the predestined path that your class is supposed to make you stick to, then it's all going to go wrong and it serves you right.
Mm.
It can't bear, the thing that it cannot bear about Ed, and what riles him is that, not that Ed is, you know, Ed's got no money, but he's happy. Ed can find happiness in strange things. And just quiet, very, very minor things. No, that's what I mean. He's not happy all the time, obviously. But you know, he's got a really good relationship with Emma. And that's the real problem that Will never ever get over. That.
Mm. To be fair to him, though,
he nearly said it, didn't he? He nearly said it when he was having that chat with Nick when she was upset, and he said, "Emma's jealous." Blah blah blah. And she said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, because you're lovely and you're nice and you're a good mum and you're this and you're that. And that's why and then he stopped the sentence and changed it. And he was going to say, "That's why I chose you."
It has to be said, right, that if somebody who, look at it from Will's point of view, and I don't want to look at anything from Will's point of view, but in this regard, you have to. He loved Emma. She had an affair with his brother, right? That's going to take you some time to really forgive and forget that.
Yeah.
You know, and so his dislike of the pair of them is rooted in a quite understandable human emotion, considering what happened. Just,
mm-hmm. just yeah. saying. Yeah. Saying. Yeah.
Mm. Right. And just whilst we're here, and I know you did mention it, I know I'm a sentimental old fool, but I do like the Joe and the Nick stuff, you know, and I do like the little insights that you do get to the Grundy household, you know, the fact that Joe was wanting to cook this meal for Clary and Eddie, because we always think that Joe is just, you know, always on the take, on the make. He's always something slightly dodgy, but actually, you know, he does love his son and his daughter.
I know I am the cynical one of this duo, but I was walking along through the forest listening to that episode, and when he was talking about Susan, his wife Susan, and she was waiting for some flash bloke, as he put it, to come and dance with her, and he never turned up.
Yeah.
And my eyes filled up with tears as I was walking along. The idea of them dancing in a cornfield and her heels sinking into the mud and everything. It was just very sweet. Mm.
No, you know, and we do get these beautiful moments, not just with the Grundys, but, you know, all scattered all throughout this. And, you know, and they're well-placed and well-timed. Sal, we have another call.
Yeah. Oh, yes. But for that, I just thought of something else I really liked this week was somebody pointing out that Alistair and Shula had managed to get every Mr. and Mrs. question wrong.
Oh, that was a big thing. After you and Robert last week went on about it was all on our Twitters, wasn't it?
Oh yes, and also we forgot to address Catherine's point about Robert and his endless injuries. Yes, we're giving him some time to recuperate, to get over his various head injuries, pubis injuries, and any other bits of himself that he's injured. So he will return like Iron Man, fully indestructible when he's got over everything. Managed to go a week without snapping something. Yes.
Mm. Right.
Witherspoon.
All right,
now.
I'm cool. All right, here we go.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, and all Dumpty Dumbers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. Last week, I noted the return of the Shakespearean drama of the Grundy brothers, and Robert mentioned that the game show Mr. and Mrs. kicked it all off. He wanted to ask me about the American version of it. I chuckled because it was exactly what I was thinking about at that very moment. The iconic 1960s and 70s show was called The Newlywed Game, hosted by Bob Eubank, and featured four couples competing for that fridge freezer. The host was famous for using the euphemistic term making whoopee, and it took me a few years as a kid to understand the question, have you ever made whoopee underwater? Anyway, it seems that the scriptwriters have grown bored with Nick and Emma being bosom buddies. In the critical scene, Will was his typical obnoxious and chauvinistic self, and Ed was reluctantly going along with Emma, who surprised me with her insight and sensitivity, as I'm not always her biggest fan. But what surprised me the most was Nick's personality transplant. I was so ready for her to assert herself against her husband's wishes, to accept Emma's fig leaf, and for them to hug it out. But no, she rejected her sister-in-law's peace overture. What motivated Nick there? I, for one, don't know. I'd like the writers to greater flesh out Nick's decision so that it makes sense to us. In the meantime, we again have the Montagues and the Capulets, but both with the surname of Grundy. Remember all, there's still Sticky Fingers George, who's now nearly 13, to think about. He, along with Ben and Rory, should be making their re-debuts one of these days, and this psychiatrist is worried that he's going to be one screwed-up kid. What do you think? Talk to you all soon.
Couldn't agree more. He's going to be a proper basket case, but an interesting and a compelling character because of it.
My God, him and Henwy, can you imagine? Jesus.
Yeah, you literally have the makeups of a kind of mass killers on your hands there, don't you? You really do.
It's quite interesting that on Mr. and Mrs. in the UK, Witherspoon, the most exciting question that Derek Beatty would ever ask is, what kind of sandwich filling do you think she's her favourite? And you had, have you ever had sex underwater? Flipping, Nora. Just shows the difference, I feel, between our two continents. I think Nick did it because she felt that she had to be loyal to Will. Because what I might be very sad and go back and listen to that episode again, actually. But I think it was Emma saying, Will, you're just a massive suck up. You're just sucking up like mad to Brian. You can't resist it. You just want to go along with the you'd do anything to protect the boss, blah, 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 blah. And that for some reason that really hurt Nick, or that sort of hit a vulnerable point. And I think she just felt that she could not, that by going with Emma, she would, because Emma had attacked Will, by siding with Emma, she would absolutely be being so disloyal to Will that she couldn't do it. Especially after all that chat that they'd had with him saying, that's why I chose you, because you're nice and you're this and you're that. And we've got a good marriage and we can tell each other anything. And I think in the back of her head, she thought, right, well, if that's what he thinks, then that's what it is then.
Mm. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I kind of get the impression that what you see is what you get with Nick. And I like her. All the more, I like the character, shall we say, all the more because of that. That she doesn't appear Though that actually she has done before, hasn't she? She has stood up to him. She has stood up to Will, and basically,
lots of times.
But in the last 3-4 months, absolutely not. You know, and I go back to that scene where she goes round to Jennifer and says that, you know, I forget exactly what happened, but something to do with the birds and the beaters or something or another. And she says, you know, Will didn't screw up, and you know, the shoot wasn't good because
Justin Elliott's friend's dogs getting loose and upsetting the pheasants, which meant they all left one particular.
Yeah, exactly. So the shoot wasn't good because of it. But that showed the strength, actually, of their relationship, and that she had absolutely had his back. She knew that because of his...
But that was before this conversation.
Mm.
She got really, really overly more upset than would be normal in that conversation with Will, when he was saying nice things to her.
Mm.
And he said, why are you crying? And she said, because you don't normally say stuff like this. And I think that kind of made her not appreciate him more, God help us, but it made her think he really does love me. He might have massive faults, but he really does love me. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of switched her to thinking she was going to defend him come what may.
Yeah. He's a horrible shitbag, right? And he's just, he's a wrong'un as a human being, but he is a good character. I just hope that he doesn't get painted with any more darker shades, because it just would just, you know, you literally just need to just boo and hiss whenever he comes on the radio.
Well, we don't want a wrong light, do we? Well, I mean,
he's on the spectrum, isn't he? He's definitely on that spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I think the script writers need to be careful that they don't push him any further down the spectrum, because it will not be believable for us as the listeners to have two such evil cads in quick succession. You know, just where he is right now, I think is just about believable and stuff. And I love the whole dynamic. As I said, I'm glad this is all happening. You know, it's all right having sweetness and light and stuff, but the Grundy boys are just not supposed to like each other, full stop. So, right. No. So you do Claire from Clapham now?
Yes. Right. Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. Not much to say about the Archers this week, except I was pleased to hear Emma extend the hand of friendship to Nick. Really sad to hear Nick not feeling able to take it, which I think she would have done if it wasn't for Will being weird and controlling. That's shades of Rob all over again. Anyway, but on happier themes, what an amazing day at the Academic Archers Conference. It was just the best. Thank you so much to Cara and Nicola for organising it, to everyone who was there, who spoke, who talked to me at the break, who were there in the audience. What a great bunch of people. I just had the most marvellous time, and it made me think about what an intelligent, knowledgeable, slightly mad, welcoming community we are. And long may it last, and really chuffed that Dumpty Dum is a part of that. And I was just thrilled to meet Christine Armstrong, the Around the World cyclist. That was one of my most exciting moments of the day. Nice to meet Dumpty Dummers in real life. Really, really good day. And thanks to everybody involved.
Ooh.
Bye then, Claire.
Are you going to go next year, Arloose?
I am. I was going to go this year, but it was in half term, and so that was kind of complicating things. And then I was poorly sick, and I could not go anywhere, so I missed the whole thing.
Are you better now?
I am, thank you.
Good.
Yes.
Ruth and Pip, I liked that.
Good.
Well, I just feel that we spent a lot of time on the Grundys. You know, it is called the Archers, after all, this thing that we love. So,
which bit of Ruth and Pip did you like?
But Ruth gave Pip a dressing down, didn't she? You know, we're not just going to.
And she sounded proper wobbly as well, didn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great bit of writing, and you felt the pent up anger and frustration that Ruth was having. Yeah. And then she just let her have it with both barrels. And even when she let her have it, she was somewhat, I think, nice about it by saying, I was not Superwoman. I was not Supermum.
Yeah.
There was times when I just wanted to, like, you know, forget all about you and whatever. I couldn't pull my weight on the farm. I was putting pressure on other people. I was not Supermum, et cetera, et cetera. And then she comes around to saying, well, you know, don't think we're going to be here for you, let alone you're 103-year-old, grandmother, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I just thought that was brilliant. And you felt, you know, Pip's top lip quiver and her just like, you know, feel so uneasy. You know, we have a go at the character of Pip all the time. And she does have, and you rightly talk about her, the actor's delivery, vocal delivery, but actually, she acted that little scene out of her skin there. That was brilliant.
Oh, I think she's a really good actress. It's just the way. Sometimes she has an unusual way of delivering lines, or just an unusual delivery.
That was brilliant, and I loved all of that, and I kind of. I know I frequently say there's too much farming in this thing, right? But I actually kind of quite like the whole parlor thing, and to get that insight into the different way of milking the cows, et cetera, et cetera. And I suppose that's the reason why there is the agricultural, you know, editor there to flesh out those bits and stuff. So the rural folk that listen to this actually do kind of connect with it. Yeah. And I just find that a fascinating insight. But I just, I loved when Ruth just given it to her. I thought that was brilliant. Right. Shall we start to slowly but surely wrap this up, Lucy, by going and having an ad break? And then you can tell people during the ad break all about your wonderful walkie-talkie, can't you?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast, you're most probably listening through a pair of headphones, which means I have the perfect sponsor with the perfect product for you. It's Studio, and they want to revolutionize the way people see headphones. Generally, fashionable headphones tend to lack the proper sound quality, and the high-tech ones are bulky and not design-orientated. Studio bridged that gap while emphasizing sleek, modern Scandinavian design. To get a 15% discount on any of their wares, go to studiosweden.com, which is spelled SUDIO Sweden.com, and simply put in the code DTD when purchasing a pair of headphones.
Hi, this is Lucy, and you're listening to Walkie Talkie. Every day, I walk my dog in and around Epping Forest.
and there's a regular group of dog walkers that catch up with each other. And the group of us, you know, we're from all kinds of different backgrounds. The one thing we have in common is that we all have dogs, obviously. And I sort of came up with the idea of recording these conversations because there's something quite confessional about walking side by side with somebody. There's no eye contact. You can just plod along. You know the names of their dog. You quite often don't know their name. You definitely don't know their surname. And it's just a very odd little hour out of the day. And you can get some really startling insights into people's lives because they know that you don't have a relationship with them outside of the dog. And also if things get a bit, you know, emotional or a bit too close, you can distract yourself with whatever the dog's doing, or you get quite close to people in a remote way. It's an intriguing sort of mixture. With people's permission, obviously, I started recording some of the conversations and it sort of grew, and now people ask if they can come on the walk even though they don't have a dog, because I think they just like the space to talk. So this is Walkie Talkie. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you in the forest.
Right then, shall we now have a social media roundup from our Millie Bell?
Yes.
Aye.
G'day, everyone. Well, lots happening on the forum this week. We had a very naughty Valentine's Day poem from Martin Lightburn. We didn't get any responses to that, but he's put a lot of effort into it. It's very amusing, so get on there and have a bit of a read. We also continue the discussion about Josh, and that's livening up again, so please get involved in that. There was also a discussion about Neil. No, not Neil. He's obviously very popular, and people are not wanting him to be the one that's bumped off. And I'm not really sure why we're talking about losing a character, because I haven't seen that forewarned, but maybe you have. And of course, I love Neil too, so I don't want him lost. Also a discussion started by Lady Barbarella about Alice the middle class drinker. That's certainly the gift that keeps on giving at the moment, isn't it? And also some talk about the Academic Artists Conference, which I was following on Facebook. And I was so, you know, I really would love to be there. I wish it wasn't quite so far away. And not really sure that they're going to be doing an Artists one in Australia. Yeah, a bit of a minority fan base here. But anyway, if you did go, very jealous. And we'd love to hear about it on our Facebook page. On our Facebook page, which I was talking about, fantastic segue, Millie Bell. We wondered whether if Susan left her job that Nick could apply for it, and Heidi Griffiths pointed out that Emma works in the tea room, so maybe not. And Teresa de Billot said Kate needs a manager for her yurts, which I'd completely forgotten about. And what is happening with that storyline? So good point there. Witherspoon wondered whether the scriptwriters are trying to soften Will's hard edges a bit without changing his basic view of the world. Melody Syracusa said, I don't see Will being softened up. I see Will trying to isolate Nick. You don't need a job. We're all you need. Just stay home, take care of the kids. Make my meals. Never see any of your friends. And always remember that Emma is jealous of us. I must admit, Melody, I actually don't think he's supportive at all either. In fact, I think he's a little bit dangerous. But anyway, Jared Pearson said, I think he's a hat-tipping yes master toadying relic of a feudal age and also a weapons-grade bellend. They can try to soften him all they like, but he's still someone I wouldn't even give the time of day to at the pub. Lots more in that vein, and we'd love you to still get involved in that thread and see what you think. Witherspoon also wanted to know what people thought of Jolene letting go of Nick. Denise Tomlinson said it was totally understandable on the face of it. On the other hand, would Nick have kicked off like that at work? Not sure she would. Denise, I'm totally with you. It was so, so out of character. And in fact, later on, as we know, her response to Emma trying to solve things also didn't make sense to me. Jenny Allen also said, I don't think she has. Sounded like Nick heard Jolene say she was going to rearrange shifts, so she wasn't on for a while, and she took that as meaning that she wouldn't have a job behind the bar. No, I think she got that she doesn't have a job anymore. At least that's certainly what it looks like to all of us, especially with giving Toby her shifts. And I had pointed out that if you tell two different fit hips to two staff members in the same tiny village, they will inevitably find out. Joanne Smith said, wasn't she just being discreet by telling Toby that Nick wasn't available? Clearly, Nick was well aware that there isn't really a shortage of work, but it's none of Toby's business why Nick isn't getting any hours right now. Telling him a fib keeps him from knowing Nick's personal business unless she herself chooses to tell him. Yep, look, you're right, Joanne, and I'm sure Jolene was doing her best in the circumstances, but she still wasn't being honest. And I just think in a small village, and I live in a small town, these things get out, so you have to find a better way to do it. We also talked about on, I think it was February the 14th here, Brian, headless chook, tactless twonk, have I missed anything? Because just before that meeting, he was really behaving strangely and, you know, a bit silly, I thought. And Martin van den Heuvel said, once more, we've got our fair share of shouting last night. But hey ho, it's actors doing a lot of shouting on the Archers Month. The editors were thanking us loyal fans for our support. And there are some other answers on the thread, but I did rather love that one. We also talked about the Valentine's Day. Look, I'm going to tell you here and now, that episode of Valentine's Day was way too soppy for me. Really, I haven't got time in my life for that crap. You know, 13 minutes I didn't need. However, I was very much in the minority. Witherspoon, who I do know is a romantic, I loved the episode. Claire Cadogan pointed out that she was a bit worried about Joe after that episode. Guy Ladbrook said if I didn't like Archers because he thought it was at its finest, he suggested EastEnders for me. I just don't like soppy. I like the rest of the Archers, though. Glyn Fuller Love also quite liked it. Look, lots and lots on that thread. Please do get involved. So, a reminder, you can speak to us on the forum or you can speak to us on Facebook. Either way, we don't mind. We want to talk to you. It's a fantastic way to get involved with 1,700 other people who have the same interest as you. So until next week, this is Millie Bell saying hooroo.
Oh, well done, Millie Bell. Thank you for that, as always. Luce, do you want to hit us with some tremendous tweets of the last 7 days?
I shall. When I can find the right bit of the script. Where am I? Yes, the cross fox. Is Joe going to die in Nick's arms, chewing a lump of cheddar and doing the fandango? Any tweet that has the word fandango in it is a winner as far as I'm concerned. Bucky Swires said, my thoughts on Toby fluctuate regularly between selfish idiot to well-meaning idiot. I can't seem to shift the idiot bit, though. Yeah, I understand that. Noi Grufty. I just impulse bought some kefir. I blame Susan Carter. It looks like someone has already drunk it once. Paul Truman said, when I picture Philip, I see a slightly sweaty-faced, flappy-handed Welsh sex octopus. The hell does a Welsh sex octopus look like? And he also said, no one in the history of radio has ever sounded this excited about a Wednesday night out in Stoke-on-Trent. That was when Clary and Eddie were going off to see Jersey Boys. And final one, tweet of the week. John Kavanagh. You all right?
Yeah, I was just saying, I was just waiting. That's of anticipation.
John Kavanagh, this is a long one. This is a tour de force, this is. John Kavanagh. Roy, what did you find with Philip? Blue tits? Kirsty, it was certainly cold. Roy, bitten? Kirsty, well, gently nibbled. Roy, lark? Kirsty, we certainly did. Roy, swallow? Goose? Kirsty, yes to both. Roy, thrush? Kirsty, thankfully, no. Very good, John Cav. That
good
was amazing.
Heavens, that was amazing. That's going to tweet the month. All right, folks. Dum-de-dum, go there. It's got a shop. It's also got a Tractor and our good people at Tractor that kind of make that for us. They've upgraded the server that to switch it off and on again or some another or hit the machine where it comes out of. But it's all better and faster now. So thank you for doing that. But also, if you want to see a little tiny bit of the Academic Archers, the bit where everybody does the dum-de-dum, go on to dum-de-dum.com and it will be on the homepage by the time that you are listening to this on the podcast. So dum-de-dum.com. And then I've forgotten what to say next. So then, do you want to read something out in red there, Lucy?
Yes, I'm sorry. If you would like to help keep our little show on the road, oh God, there are two ways this could be done. You can donate by hitting the donate button on the site, or you can sponsor us via patreon.com.
And remember to get in contact with us. You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe, which is on our website, or you can call us on 0203 031 3105. Now, I do know that every now and then, folks, crumbs, was that you?
Getting lots of messages, Royf. It's you.
Oh, okay. Now, I do know that every now and then, our visually impaired listeners have problems using the speak pipe. And I know that we have a listener in the US who is blind, who wants to call in. So if you are outside of the UK, it's +44 203 031 3105. So you can, it does work internationally. And it's if you leave it to a couple of minutes, the cost of the call shouldn't bankrupt you. So if you're visually impaired and can't use SpeakPipe, use that number. Or if your eyes work, great, use that number outside of the UK if by any chance you cannot use SpeakPipe. On social media, you can find me and Lucy at DumDeeDum. Lucy is at
Lucy V. Freeman.
And I can be found at Royfield on Facebook. You can go and join the Millie Bell and Witherspoon Three Ring Circus, and go join all those wonderful people who like hanging out on Facebook and having fun talking about the Archers. We didn't really talk about Black Panther, Lucy. We managed to get to the end without me waxing lyrical about how wonderful it was just to be part of an event. And I don't want to be all kind of like, oh, you know, maybe proud to be black and all that kind of malarkey. I'm going to put that completely to one side. But what I would say is that for a film which is fundamentally a Marvel movie, shed load of politics and a whole load of emotion and a compelling, believable antagonist. And, you know, and I just, you know, I'm not saying that Will Grundy's Killmonger, right? But having someone who's a baddie, but his motivation makes sense, and you go, yeah, you've got a point there, right? And you were done wrong, makes for the portrayal of the antagonist much more believable. So, it just kind of goes back to what I was saying before, that I think, we have to be careful, at least the script writers have to be careful how much malice and vitriol they throw at the character Will Grundy, because he will just become totally a caricature. And I think he's bordering on it now. But when you think of the fact that his brother, who he's never really liked, you know, went off with his wife, you know, well, there is reason for him just to be the hateful little shitbag that he is, really. But hey, Black Panther, you don't need me to be an advocate for it. It's a wonderful piece of movie making. And one of the great things also about it is that you even get intra-BAP politics. You know, you got the African-Americans and Africans and the difference between them and how they see the world, etc. You know, it's all there, Lucy. All there, Lucy. Go see it, then come back and tell me next week what you thought about it.
Okay.
Awesome. All right, then. Toodaloo.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.